Today's reading is Psalm 125, a song of ascents. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but abides forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people, from this time forth and forevermore. For the scepter of wickedness shall not rest on the land allotted to the righteous, lest the righteous stretch out their hands to do wrong. Do good, O Lord, to those who are good, and to those who are upright in their hearts. But those who turn aside to their crooked ways, the Lord will lead away with evildoers. Peace be upon Israel.
Through the wilderness of this world. That's a line from John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, one of the great allegories of the Christian life, thought to be one of the most significant works in English literature. I remember my brother and I having a children's version of it read to us and being gripped by the story of Christian as he comes across characters with names like Evangelist and Worldly Wiseman. The names were a great help. Even I could work out what was going on with the analogy. Christians on a journey up to the celestial city. And that opening line of Pilgrim's Progress, it's one of those compelling beginnings to a story that hooks you in immediately, makes you want to read on. It's the line I started with. As I walked through the wilderness of this world. This world was created by the Lord who made heaven and earth. That's why it can be so very good, this world. But the wilderness of this world is a description that will always resonate to some extent for the godly pilgrim who knows all too well that London or wherever is clearly not the capital city of the kingdom of God. The wilderness of this world often presses in with its lies and contempt, even angry hostility. I wonder how you're feeling any of that at the moment. Bunyan knew all about the wilderness. He penned Pilgrim's Progress from his prison cell, where he'd been incarcerated specifically to stop him preaching the gospel. And in these songs of ascents, God has been leading us into just a very healthy realism about Pilgrim Road. These songs tell a story of distress, but helped and soon to be home. We said last week that pattern that you see in the first trio is thought to be a recurring one. And by the way, we're going to have a question time next Sunday, so get ready then to ask any questions you like about those kind of details or the Psalms more generally. And I hope we'll get into some really good application questions about anything we've raised so far on walking in relationship with the Lord. Message them in this week, though, for better answers next week. Anyway, if that structure's right, then today's Psalm is the final one of the next trio. And that would make it another picture of home to envision and energize us on. Certainly aspects of Psalm 125 are future focus. You see, it speaks of Jerusalem, Mount Zion at the heart of the city where we're journeying to. It speaks of land being allotted to the righteous and peace. But verse 2, this time forth and forevermore. Here is a psalm that wants to make connections between now and the future, between here and home. And the first two verses here are a picture of total security. I think so that we really understand the image in these first two verses. Will you come back with me to the year 1000 BC, to a city on a hill in the Middle East? And in ancient cities, they often built their fortifications up on a hill, partly just because the simple thing of gravity being on your side, much harder for the enemy to get to you when they have to travel up to you rather than if you were exposed on a wide open plain. A city on a hill meant added security. And that's why this particular city on a hill called Jerusalem proved so difficult to capture. We long associate Jerusalem with the nation of Israel, but when God's people entered the promised land, it was already occupied territory. And slightly awkwardly, the godless folk who dwelled there were not in the mood to budge easily. Jerusalem basically said, come and have a go if you think you're hard enough. Blindfold us, make us fight on one leg. Haven't got a chance, we're so secure up here. Well, David took Jerusalem, aka Zion, now aka the city of David. The king saw the merits of the place, moved his government in. Jerusalem became his stronghold. And made even stronger by the fact that mountains surrounded this mountain. Some of you might have been there in real life and will know this more than me, but Jerusalem is surrounded by mountains all around, which function as a double lock, if you like, another protective layer to the city on a hill. Why the geography and history lesson? Because that's the image for what it's like to be one of those who trusts the Lord. I don't know if you've ever been compared to a mountain before. If you're a really big guy, maybe people call you Man Mountain. But most of us weaklings, it's an odd image. You are like a mountain surrounded by a range of mountains for your extra fortification. Verse 1, those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but abides forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people from this time forth and forevermore. Notice now as well as future. Notice the protection is personal, not from a force or an airbag, or an agency, the big hand of Yahweh wrapped around you all the time. And notice most importantly that this illustration is not random. So yeah, in some ways you could update the image and simply say, you're as secure as Fort Knox, or you're as impregnable as an armored tank. But Jerusalem is Yahweh's place. That's how it was described in Psalm 122. All of his plans and purposes crystallize there. His new Jerusalem, in that sense, is the future, which means its protection comes ultimately not from its geography, but from its Lord. You are the people of Jerusalem walking through the wilderness of this world. The people are the heartbeat of that city. In a sense, it needs you to get there to fulfill its destiny, which is all wrapped up with yours. And that's why right now, you are just as immovable as that future place. Last week's psalm reminded us how vicious the attacks of the enemy can be, how sunk we were without the Lord on our side. Here is a reminder of how invested that same Lord is in your ongoing protection. Is he really on my side, though? Now? Well, the question to ask here is he really on Jerusalem's side? As you read the Bible, is the Lord committed to the idea of a city of God? Of course he is, totally. Well, he has exactly the same level of commitment to getting its residents home. If you trust him, you cannot be moved from reaching that home. You will abide forever. And right now, you are surrounded. Not in the negative way that phrase is used in the cop movies, surrounded by the Lord, not just on a journey towards him, but with him beside all the way. Now that's very precious to know, isn't it? But in a sense, so far so songs of ascents, being so personally guarded by him is familiar territory. And verse 3 begins with another familiar thought. Verse 3, for the scepter of wickedness shall not rest on the land allotted to the righteous. A scepter is a big stick rulers would carry as a symbol of their sovereignty. I suppose the point being, I'll boss you over the head with it if you don't do what I say. Wickedness often seems to reign in the wilderness of this world, doesn't it? Even back in their earthly Jerusalem, sometimes ungodly powers ruled. In Jesus' day, pilgrims singing this song on the way up to the feasts were singing on the way up to Roman-occupied Jerusalem. What respite to be promised that the lying lips, the scorn of the proud, this whole spiritual battle that we've had it up to here with, well, none of that will exert any power over God's people anymore when they're home. Revelation 21 says nothing unclean will enter New Jerusalem. No anti-Jesus governments. No legislators redefining his good ways. No influencers questioning his goodness. Won't that be a relief? But the second half of verse 3, I think, is a new angle in the Songs of Ascents. Verse 3 again. For the scepter of wickedness shall not rest on the land allotted to the righteous, lest the righteous stretch out their hands to do wrong. Now, I think that's a sad verse in some ways. Wickedness can't be part of God's city, because if it was, we'd be tempted to deviate into it. It's realistic, isn't it? Certainly was an issue for Israel in the land back in the day, even their own leaders turning aside to the crooked ways of the people around them. Isn't it the truth that one of the biggest challenges for pilgrims is not only the pressure when the world attacks us, but the pressure when it allures us, often to our very core? How hard not to buy its lies, sometimes whole church denominations buy the lies. So easy to envy those who are at ease rather than endure this exhausting fight to be the different ones. If we just toned the keenness down, no one needs to be rising up in anger against us at all. I think this puts a new shade on the first two verses. See, the surrounding protection we need now is partly from ourselves. The help we're asking for, not simply to remove persecution, but to help us resist the temptation to sleep with the enemy. We're asking for mercy, so that having had it up to here, we won't turn aside to the easier path. Now, I really hope that the personal discipleship reviews that we're doing, and Rebecca and Anya talked about those at the prayer night, I hope that they'll partly be a chance to be honest about where you're feeling the heat right now. Maybe lockdown has brought new opportunities to stretch out your hand and do wrong, or old idols have returned in a fresh way. Perhaps lockdown has actually shielded you in more ways than one, and you're worried about stepping back out of isolation into the temptation zone. The spiritual battle just feels like the most real thing going on in our life sometimes, doesn't it? The anti-God stuff seems immovable, seems to be winning, maybe winning in your own heart. But this says the evil one has his days numbered. Verse 3 here says, God has set a boundary point when the creeping influence of all that's wrong will be rolled back and banished permanently. Crooked ways feel so the prevailing culture, but they won't last. The people of God will. Those who trust in the Lord are the ones who cannot be moved, but will abide forever. Do you trust in the Lord as you walk through the wilderness of this world? I want to, but I've definitely got room to grow in trusting him. And one of the ways that God keeps his people trusting him is to keep us leaning in towards him and talking to him. That's why the Psalms are just such a rich place to go to help you grow in your relationship with God. Remember that humble posture of the first of this set of three Psalms? Looking up, waiting, asking for mercy. Here is another psalm that leads us into that devotional response. Verse 4. Do good, O Lord, to those who are good, and to those who are upright in their hearts. But those who turn aside to their crooked ways, the Lord will lead away with evil doers. Peace be upon Israel. Now, you may have noticed if you've read the Psalms a bit before, you every now and then come across in a prayer in a psalm that slightly jars initially. You think, oh, I'm praying for God to do good to those who are good. Is that me? Don't feel very good often. And it's not all about being good, I thought. And what about these people who are led away? Am I meant to be glad about that? If these are pilgrims' prayers to make our own, what kind of prayer are we being led into here? Well, it's basically just another come, Lord Jesus prayer. Those who are good here are those who trust in the Lord and want to walk in his upright ways, even though they do it failingly. By the way, we're not getting out of the Songs of Ascents before we have a whole psalm about our need for forgiveness on the journey. Watch this space. The righteous are those who ask for that forgiveness, as opposed to those who happily turn aside from the Lord. They have no place in his city. How could they? I mean, you can't have a city of God with people who hate God in it. You can't have a land of righteousness occupied by those who disagree with God's definition of right. You can't have the peace, end of verse 5, without there being a great separation. But the main focus of this prayer is for vindication. Lord, you are good. Your ways are good. We want to trust them and speak them and live them. Vindicate us, please, for doing that. In a world that often thinks we're mad and has twisted things so much, even to think that you're some kind of medieval monster. Vindicate us by doing the good you have promised. Bring us to the secure place of relief from the battles of the wilderness. And would your surrounding hand keep us from turning away while we are on the road? Often my prayers are full of now. It's fine to pray about things going on in your life now. Cast all those anxieties on him because he cares for you. But don't forget to pray in the future. So many prayers of the Bible lean into God in trust by asking him to do what he has covenanted he will. Pray yourself home.